This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib coming up on Africa News Tonight.
There are so many, but the major ones are cardiovascular diseases, cancers, chronic respiratory diseases. The last one is stroke.
That's Dr. Abdi Kamal Ali Salad, Acting Director for Non-Communicable Diseases for the WHO in Congo-Brazzaville. He's also co-author of a study that found African adults are at high risk of non-communicable diseases. We have full details coming up.
Also, the country's top opposition leader in the DRC calls for a campaign of peaceful resistance because President Joseph Kabila, whose mandate has expired, still remains in office.
And
the European Union says it supports current efforts for a peaceful and smooth transition of power in the Gambia.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, UN human rights officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo say they have received reports of 20 people killed in Kinshasa since yesterday in sporadic clashes between protesters and security forces. President Joseph Kabila's second elected mandate expired at midnight, but he remains in office. The country's top opposition leader has called for a campaign of peaceful resistance. William Clowes has the latest from Kinshasa.
As midnight approached on Monday, much of Kinshasa was filled with whistling and the banging of pots and pans to mark the end of President Joseph Kabila's second and, according to the constitution, final term in office. The celebrations gave way to clashes between small groups of demonstrators and security forces while gunfire was heard in opposition neighbourhoods. Sporadic running battles continued through Tuesday, and local media have reported that an office building belonging to Kabila's political party and a police headquarters were set on fire. José María Arenas, the director of the UN Joint Human Rights Office in the DRC, told Reuters that his team is reviewing reports that 20 civilians have been killed in confrontations with security forces. Arenas told VOA that military police had denied his staff access to the University of Kinshasa, where clashes have taken place, and threatened them. VOA visited opposition areas and saw evidence of the street battles.
Le mandat de M. Kabila a pris fin hier, 23h59.
In Matete, an opposition area, Peter Kabongo tells VOA that security forces spent the night shooting tear gas and live rounds, as well as arresting people. According to Kabongo, their purpose was to intimidate the population. Soldiers and police have been patrolling Kinshasa and other cities since last week, and political demonstrations have been banned since September. Kabila's chief diplomatic adviser, Barnaby Kikaya bin Karubi, said the measures are justified.
Le déploiement des forces de l'ordre dans la ville de Kinshasa.
Karubi said on Monday that the level of tension throughout the DRC justifies the massive deployment of security forces. He blamed the media for presenting December 19th, the last day of Kabila's term, as an apocalyptic date. The Constitutional Court ruled earlier this year that Kabila can stay in office until the Electoral Commission is able to organise elections. He named a new unity government late Monday night under terms of a deal signed last month that provisionally schedules polls for April 2018. But the preeminent leader of the Congolese opposition for more than 35 years, Etienne Tshisekedi, addressed the nation in a video statement shared online.
Je lance un appel solennel. D'abord au peuple congolais.
He says, I launch a solemn appeal to the Congolese people to not recognize the illegal and illegitimate authority of Joseph Kabila and to peacefully resist this coup d'etat. He accused Kabila of high treason. Tshisekedi says the opposition platform that he heads, Le Rassemblement, will resume negotiations with the president's political alliance on Wednesday, following a four-day suspension. The opposition is calling for polls during 2017 and for Kabila to commit to not running in the next presidential election. William Clowes for VOA News, Kinshasa.
The The European Union says it supports current efforts for a peaceful and smooth transition of power in the Gambia. A spokesman says the EU backs ECOWAS, the African Union, and the United Nations to encourage President Yahya Jammeh to step down. Jammeh lost the December 1st election to Adama Barrow, but he claims irregularities have caused the vote to be null and void. He wants to appeal the results to the Gambian Supreme Court. Jammeh has been in power for 22 years. The EU says it expects Jammeh to respect the will of the people. Also, the EU calls unacceptable the occupation of the offices of the Independent Electoral Commission by Gambian security forces.
Coming up on 11 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. A new report released by the World Health Organization reveals that most adults in Africa have at least one risk factor that increases their chances of developing a life-threatening non-communicable disease, or NCD. Among the illnesses they could develop are heart disease, cancer, type 2 diabetes, and chronic obstructive lung disease. The report provides the first in-depth and country-specific data on the prevalence of major risk factors across the continent. It finds that in half of the African countries surveyed, one quarter of adults had at least three of these risk factors. Dr. Abdi Kamal Ali Salad is the acting director for non-communicable diseases for the WHO in Congo-Brazzaville and co-author of the study. He explains the purpose of conducting the survey.
The purpose of that tool is to gather data or information on the magnitude of the risk factors for non-communicable disease globally, actually. It is a global tool.
In looking at your region, what are the non-communicable diseases?
There are so many, but the major ones are cardiovascular diseases, cancers, chronic respiratory diseases. The last one is stroke.
In your survey, you found that most adults in Africa have at least one risk factor that increases their chances of developing a life-threatening non-communicable disease. So what are these risk factors?
The risk factor is that we usually observe or see as two categories. One is behavior-related risk factors or lifestyle risk factors, which are tobacco use, harmful use of alcohol, consumption of unhealthy diet. The fourth one is physical inactivity. Those are the ones that are related to lifestyle. But then we also have what we call intermediate risk factors. These intermediate risk factors are physiological or biological in nature. And these are obesity, then high blood pressure, high blood sugar, and then the fourth one is high blood cholesterol. So these are what we call the four behavior-related risk factors and four intermediate risk factors that would then lead to major non-communicable disease entity.
Why are more people in Africa now suffering from these diseases that were usually associated with the West?
In Africa, with the growing economy and the changing demographic transition and epidemiological transition, these risk factors and ultimately chronic disease illnesses are becoming more prevalent, because you could see that now these risk factors are increasing, you know, harmful use of alcohol, tobacco use, more sedentary life as people move from villages, they come to urban centers. And then they acquire the urban lifestyle, you know, because there is transportation everywhere. People walk less. Then the fast food, you could see how the fast food industry is mushrooming and expanding. And people are exposed to all these risk factors that were before very prevalent in a developed country. But now all of these are coming up in urban centers or urban towns in Africa.
What particular countries did you all focus on for this study?
We do it every 5 years in all our country. For us, we have 47 countries. So about 40 of them have conducted these surveys. We plan to use these kind of studies to, one, to know where are we standing in terms of risk factors and NCDs, and also to see whether the interventions we are implementing are making impact.
And what have you found, considering that about a quarter of adults had at least three of the risk factors in the countries that you all surveyed?
We are encouraging our member states to develop and implement a multi-sectoral action plan. When I say multi-sectoral, means, as you could imagine, controlling NCD risk factors, most of the work lies outside the health sector. So the health sector needs other sectors to collaborate and also do their share of the NCD fight. That is the first step, to bring together all sectors in the government and also the private sector to come together and draw a national plan. Then the second one is to improve our health systems to screen and treat NCDs. Like, for example, hypertension is a very dangerous condition that we all have the tools at the health systems level to screen. The blood pressure monitor is available in all health centers. So what we want is every adult be screened for hypertension or be screened for cervical cancer for women, so that at least that early stage when we pick up people who have the condition or who are more risk of developing NCDs, then be counseled and treated as well.
That was Dr. Abdi Kamal Ali Salad, Acting Director of Noncommunicable Diseases for the WHO. He spoke with me from Congo, Brazzaville.
In southeastern Chad, the medical aid group Doctors Without Borders is trying to stop the spread of the disease known as hepatitis E. The disease can severely damage the liver and can be fatal to pregnant women, VOS Jody Kapowa reports.
Sick people with yellow eyes. That's how residents in the city of Omdurman often describe someone suspected of having hepatitis E. It can cause jaundice or a yellow discoloration in the eyes or skin. Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, says Hep E can have serious consequences for maternal and fetal health. These include aborting the fetus, bleeding after birth, premature babies, stillbirth, or death. David Beversluis is the MSF project coordinator for the Hepatitis E Response Project in Omdurman.
Hepatitis E is a viral illness. It's a virus that causes acute inflammation of the liver after it's transmitted through contact with fecal material, basically. People's hands can spread this virus, and it can also be spread through contaminated water.
He says there's no specific treatment for the virus, so doctors often treat the symptoms, like vomiting or dehydration. It may take 4 to 6 weeks to develop after infection, and another 4 to 6 weeks to resolve itself with supportive care. He says Hep E started to appear in the Chad city a few months ago.
So we noticed through our networks and in the hospital in early September, a number of cases that we thought were suspicious for hepatitis E. There were several pregnant women all within the course of a week who came in with kind of yellow eyes, with jaundice. Two of them got quite sick and died very early on. So that raised a bunch of flags for us.
The mortality rate for the disease is roughly 1 in 25, but it can be as high as 1 in 4 for pregnant women. Beversluis says most of the cases have been found in Omdurman, but Hep E infections have begun to show up outside the city.
How widespread it is in the entire region, it's hard to say. Some of the outer-lying region of southeastern Chad, we're not visiting very regularly, so it may be that there's cases there.
Doctors Without Borders is trying to disrupt the chain of transmission of hepatitis E through prevention programs.
Improving the hygiene quality in the city by improving water quality and trying to kill this virus in the water on people's hands so that we really can try to avoid the spread of the disease before it causes all the mortality and the deaths in the pregnant women.
Beversluis says efforts are underway to clean the drinking water. The nearby river and a number of wells are contaminated.
The practice of chlorination, which is, you know, pretty common in a lot of the world, is not happening here. And so even in the city water supply, there's a risk of contamination and no chlorination that can kill this virus.
MSF has set up small water chlorination programs at about 75 points around Omdurman. Chlorine is put in buckets used to collect water. It's also working with the local government to add chlorine to the local water supply system. The medical aid group also has distributed hygiene kits to 10,000 households, or about 75,000 people. And it's distributed buckets, jerry cans, and over 300,000 bars of soap. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
In Zimbabwe, Education Minister Jonathan Moyo has announced the rebirth of the country's college loans and grants program. Moyo says the financial aid package will launch in 2017, 11 years after a similar program was suspended because of lack of funds. The announcement was made at the weekend national conference of the ruling ZANU-PF party in Masingo. Moyo said the nation needs well-educated human capital to lead in the modernization of the country's troubled industries.
Mali government officials have said they will not help the European Union identify and return illegal Malian migrants to the country. Ongoing talks on the issue are part of a larger effort by the EU to try to curb migration via cooperation with key countries of origin, a strategy that resulted in a multi-million dollar deal with Niger earlier this month. Katrina Hoya files from Bamako.
In Mali, negotiations on facilitating migrant returns have caused a stir. Following terms of the proposed deal detailing the presence of civil servants in Europe to help authorities there identify Malians there illegally. The government's main concern is the safety and well-being of Malians abroad, Foreign Minister Abdoulaye Diop told reporters in Bamako on Monday.
Le président Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta, président de la République du Mali, accorde la plus grande importance.
He said the question of Malian migrants and refugees is a matter of the heart to the president and himself. He also said civil servants traveling to Europe to identify migrants who have had their asylum requests rejected is out of the question at the moment. The EU is currently negotiating a $116 million deal with Mali to expedite the return of migrants to the African country. The talks cover a number of areas, including providing the funds to help job creation and assistance in fighting people smuggling to prevent Malians from heading to Europe. The negotiations are the most detailed yet between Brussels and an African country.
Je le dis, je le répète, aucun accord n'a été signé avec l'Union européenne, ni accord de réadmission.
Diop said no deal has been reached and that negotiations will continue. He said any deportations of Malian citizens from the EU needs to be conducted with respect for human rights. The two parties will also work to create jobs for young Malians while Malian authorities plan to issue identity cards and biometric passports to help track migrants. So far, the EU has reached agreements with a handful of African countries, including Sudan and Mali's neighbour Niger. EU border agency Frontex has estimated that more than 10,000 Malians have entered the bloc since the start of 2015. This month, Algeria rounded up and deported 260 Malians. Katrina Haye for VOA News, Bamako.
Just days before Christmas, thousands of passengers find themselves with no place to go after employees of Nigeria's largest airline went on strike today. Striking Arik employees effectively shut down jet service to more than 100 domestic and international destinations this morning. A union official with the National Association of Aircraft Pilots and Engineers says employees have not been paid for months. The struggling airline blames much of its financial troubles on a dwindling supply of jet fuel. Low oil prices and a shortage of foreign currency have also fueled a recession in Nigeria, Africa's largest economy and its second largest oil-producing state.
Researchers in Britain have found a novel class of drug that they say has the potential to slow memory loss, even restoring some memory and extending the lives of people living with Alzheimer's. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
According to the Alzheimer's Association, globally an estimated 47 million people, mostly older adults, suffer from Alzheimer's disease, a neurodegenerative condition that robs sufferers of their memory and eventually leads to death. But researchers, first at the University of Leicester, who are now at the University of Glasgow in Scotland, have found a new class of drug that not only slows memory loss, but appears to restore it, as well as extending life in a mouse model of Alzheimer's. The drug, called allosteric ligands, targets a protein that's involved with memory. As patients with Alzheimer's progress, the protein in a brain region called the hippocampus becomes less active. But the experimental drug appears to activate the protein, called M1 muscarinic receptor, slowing and restoring some memory loss that's associated with the disease. Andrew Tobin, professor of molecular biology at University of Glasgow, is lead author of the work published in the Journal of Clinical Investigation. For reasons that are not entirely clear yet, Tobin says ligands also extended the life of mice.
It probably is a distinct biochemical pathway. It's still going through this receptor, but it's doing something else in the brain, which is protecting the neurons from neurodegeneration. And the big question that we have in the lab is, what is that mechanism? What is the biochemical mechanism that underlies that response? And of course, that's the next thing we'll be looking at.
Current treatments for Alzheimer's are designed to improve symptoms, and researchers say their work represents an actual treatment. The experimental compound was tested in a mouse model of Alzheimer's. The animals were bred to exhibit signs of mad cow disease, which looks similar to Alzheimer's in humans in terms of memory loss, progression, and death. On a memory test, the treated rodents were able to recall receiving a mild electric shock when challenged. Without the compound, Tobin says, control mice did not remember the stimulus. Tobin cautions that a drug is probably 5 to 10 years away.
These advances take us forward a step at a time, and whereas they do give a lot of hope, I think, to people in this area, that it's not an immediate cure for a relative that you have at the moment.
The research by Tobin and colleagues was supported by Britain's Medical Research Council and the Wellcome Trust Charitable Foundation. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the 2016 year in review, we'll take a look at some of the continent's major events and happenings. We'll discuss Africa's political landscape and some of the challenges its leaders faced in 2016. That's right here on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can't these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at UpfrontAfrica.